This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be speaking with Seth Joseph. Seth is one of the world leaders in following Epic, giving thoughts on Epic, and advising in the health IT area. Seth, why don't I let you give an introduction of yourself so I make sure we hit this right. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Appreciate it, Scott. Thanks for having me. Seth Joseph, I am Managing Director of Summit Health Advisors. We are a boutique advisory and consultancy. We do a lot of work with health technology and digital health startups and investors, helping them to find product market fit, figure out commercialization, business strategy. And we also do work with health systems kind of as a byproduct of the network we've built on the innovation front. And as you've alluded to, I also write as a contributor to Forbes.com, where I cover the intersection of healthcare, technology, and policy, and certainly have found that Epic seems to hold a spot that crosses all three of those channels.
100%. And just before we talk about Epic some, tell us what are some most interesting trends that you're watching currently in healthcare and healthcare technology. What are you watching closely?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm really excited about and what gets us up in the morning is the opportunities to think about technology and health information technology in a different way in terms of solving not just problems that software can solve or you can solve with a software mindset or even an artificial intelligence mindset in terms of solving for one type of problem for one constituent. But what happens if you put a platform or a network, a technology-enabled network between different constituents? All of a sudden, you can start to solve problems at scale, the types of problems that are pervasive in healthcare, coordination problems, communication problems, problems around information asymmetry, problems relating to trust. And by way of example, I mean, there's a lot of enthusiasm out there for artificial intelligence to ease clinicians' burden associated with prior authorization at the point of care. There's also a lot of enthusiasm around what artificial intelligence can do to automate more of the decision-making on the payer side. But what we're talking about is solving for problems at two endpoints. And I think the real power comes if you think about connecting those two different constituents with an electronic health network or information network that processes transactions in real time from requests or determination of whether prior authorization is required to responses to information collecting on one side to submission to the other to decisions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I would point to what we've achieved with e-prescribing as an example of the power of health information exchange as a verb and what happens if you get it right at scale. You know, over the past 20 years, you know, we've gone from paper prescribing to e-prescribing probably more than 90% of all prescriptions, and we are better, safer, and we're realizing tremendous savings at scale as a result.
And talk about sort of when you look at sort of either speaking to investors or speaking to health systems in two different groups, when you talk to investors in healthcare, where are they most excited? And then when you talk to health systems in healthcare, of course, where are they most excited?
Good question. Honestly, I'm going to give the typical, you know, MBA answer here, which is, you know, it depends. It depends on which investors you're talking with. But I think, you know, I've mentioned artificial intelligence. I think there's an enormous amount of excitement around artificial intelligence and the ability to solve administrative, operational, and clinical challenges through the use of AI to take burden off of clinicians' hands. On the investor side in general, there's a fair amount of enthusiasm and excitement. The question is that I hear back from more cautious or perhaps just more seasoned investors is, are these really businesses you can that are going to scale well, that are defensible? Can they, you know, if you invest in AI to solve one specific use case, is the model that you've built or the capabilities and the assets that you've built applicable to different use cases? Can you sell into those different use cases or channels, et cetera? So questions around kind of how they scale, but certainly a lot of excitement. On the health system side, you know better than do I. I think in the Becker's readership, has gone through several years of challenges. Hopefully we're starting to come through those operational, staffing, financial challenges. And if anything, I think there's sort of hopefully I'll characterize it fairly as saying, cautious optimism around the future, and that as leaders start to get out under the hangover of COVID and all of these challenges, that there's sort of optimism around the types of problems that health technology can start to solve for, and new avenues for them to explore growth.
Thank you. Talk to Seth about Epic is so fascinating. There was a period of time where Epic was at a spot where people were using Epic as their sort of enterprise platform, but then trying to do all kinds of one-off solutions for everything, sort of point solutions. Now it seems that there's really a whole mix of both. A lot of systems trying to use Epic for as much as they possibly can, so not dealing with 2,000 point solutions. Other systems, if they can find a best in class outside of Epic, they're doing so. What's your sense of what's going on with Epic in the infrastructure and just the healthcare system? Where is Epic at? And where are systems at on Epic?
Yeah, I appreciate it. I think in many respects, where Epic is at seems to be consistent with what a lot of health systems are looking for, which is for Epic to solve more and more problems. You know, you referenced health systems dealing with, hundreds or thousands of different, point solutions. I think there's a lot of point solution fatigue. Spoke with a number of, CIOs and health systems for the couple of articles that I wrote. And the challenges associated with not just, evaluating these different point solutions, bring them through the procurement process, but even just managing the integrations, managing the relationships, is really challenging, especially when you've had, a rapid expansion of all of these different point solutions. And there's so much promise of what technology can help to solve for in healthcare. The challenge is it's still at the end of the day, human beings who kind of have to manage these integrations, manage the relationships, and ultimately hold their partners accountable. And there is real fatigue. And so to the extent that a trusted party like Epic, who's had, relationships going on years, in many cases, decades beyond that in many others, there's a sense of trust with Epic. If Epic can do it and does it pretty well, and they're going to do it better over time, and they can do it at relatively lower cost with higher predictability and security, there's a real benefit to that. And that seems to be consistent with kind of Epic's mindset. They seem to be expanding rapidly beyond their core EHR. What I wrote about is that they've allegedly distributed a sheet that says, products you can replace with Epic. It's a list of 323 different categories of products that Epic has already expanded into, or they intend to expand into. These range from patient access to patient digital experience to customer relationship management to population health to machine learning to payer data integration to enterprise billing. It's extraordinarily expansive. And so certainly it seems that, Epic's aspirations are perhaps bound only by their vision.
Let me ask you a follow-up question to that. It seems though at some point, and this is maybe a question about company building and thoughts that you have or observations. At what point, if I went back 10 years ago, we got a lot of complaints about the different point solutions Epic was doing and their inferiority to some of the point solutions out there. It seems that over the last decade or so, and it's not that they're perfect and everything, because they're far from it, but that Epic has continued to invest in their product and what they do and gotten better in general. I would say I heard a lot less complaints from health systems about Epic than I did 10 years ago on a whole variety of issues, from the cost of Epic blowing up when people were trying to install it to implement it, to just the quality of some of the different point solutions. My impression is that they've done an incredible job of continuing to double down on resources and invest in their product. And I'd love to get your thoughts as an advisor to the sort of healthcare ecosystem, and so your impressions of that, because it seems like there's few companies that do that, that keep on investing and getting better. It's just very hard to maintain that discipline. Any thoughts from yourself on that?
Well, you know, I think Epic has several massive advantages, and, you know, Judith Faulkner has been quoted and is on the record about this. You know, of course, people are familiar with the fact that Epic was started and founded by Judy Faulkner. The investors, the original investors in Epic, were not necessarily financial investors. They were friends, family, and later, I think, some strategic partners. But they don't have, as I understand it, financial investors who are interested in a short-term return, which is a good thing, of course, because Epic has been privately held for 45 years, I think, now. And, you know, the upside of this for Epic is they can make long-term investments. They are not held to account to explain, you know, the return on investments that they're getting on a quarter-by-quarter basis. They can afford to be patient. And so I think, you know, what you've described is absolutely what I've heard. They've only continue to invest in their core product. And of course, they're expanding rapidly outside of the core product into these, you know, 323 other products. I think one of the things perhaps that they've figured out how to do really well is develop a playbook of announcing new products on their roadmap and kind of setting good expectations as to when will those products come out? What can customers expect in terms of, you know, comparative performance versus, you know, best of breed point solutions? What the cost might look like, and then how Epic will improve on what is, I think, fairly oftentimes an inferior new product versus those competitive, you know, point solutions, but is better integrated, is simpler, is one company, one set of, you know, relationships that the health system is going to manage, and how the performance is going to improve over time until they reach parity. And it seems to be a playbook that Epic is rolling out with considerable success, given how much they've been growing and expanding beyond their core.
Thank you. And what advice? Do you work with a lot of software as a service companies as well, or more with investors and health systems?
We do work with software as a service companies, technology companies, digital health startups, et cetera. Yes.
And so what kind of advice would you give to them from some of the learnings you've seen from observing Epic so closely for so long?
Well, yeah, and I'm actually working on this right now because I think it's an important companion piece. How can companies work with Epic productively, and alternatively, how can they compete effectively against Epic? And so the first thing I will start off with is I spoke with one CEO who runs a successful company that I don't think he considers himself or his company to be a competitor to Epic, but, you know, it's on the list of the 323 products that is on Epic's roadmap. And he said, look, if Epic can beat me, then good on Epic. In shorthand, his challenge, self, his team, and his investors is to figure out how to stay at least several steps ahead of and better than Epic. And so the first thing is, look, you can use it as motivation. The reality is Epic is an extraordinary company. They execute at a very high level. They do have growth aspirations. And so if you want to compete with them, you got to figure out how to be better, faster, nimbler, higher quality, et cetera. And so you use that as motivation. A second thing is there are opportunities to innovate well beyond what Epic can. And by that, I mean, there are ways to innovate on the business model side. One of those ways is do something that Epic can't. Take on risk. I mean, Epic is an enterprise software company. To my knowledge, they don't take on any risk, but there are absolutely ways for companies to compete effectively in similar areas by proving out and believing in the quality of their product and bearing that out by taking on risk in appropriate situations. A second opportunity for companies is don't try and sell software. Don't try and sell software. If you're going to provide software to providers, think about ways you can connect those providers to different constituents, be it payers or pharmaceutical companies or pharmacies or labs or medical device companies. Figure out ways of creating value by connecting different constituents to providers and adding value, whether that's through workflow, through communications, through data and reporting. And of course, you need to do this carefully and transparently. You need to be clear about the business that you're in. But this is a tremendous opportunity for companies, software companies, to reinvent themselves and become platform companies that create value by connecting different constituents to each other, not unlike an Uber or an Airbnb or a Facebook, for instance. So those are a few ways that I think health technology companies and startups can think about competing with Epic. And of course, many of them are going to need to partner with Epic as well to be successful.
And let me ask you one more question before I let you go, Seth. It seems like 5-10 years ago that people were trying to build the very best point solution in a very specific niche that somebody would need. And that still seems to be a great thing to do. However, investors seem to not want to invest in something that's so narrow. They want to invest in a company that has a broader set of solutions. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts for software companies on this conundrum of trying to be really great at something so that you could be the best in the world at that specific point solution versus the desire of investors to very much want you to be beyond just a point solution? Any thoughts there and how you think about that with software companies and technology companies?
Well, my goodness, if it were easy, everybody would have figured it out already, right? But I think it's a good question. And in my mind, the answer is, look, it's really easy to envision how one might build a platform at scale, or at least what that vision is. The challenge is you've got to get there. You've got to earn the right. And so I think what you've described in terms of point solutions kind of starting out with a narrow focus, that generally is right. You need to focus on solving a real world problem. Platforms don't solve real world problems. Platforms occur after somebody solved those real world problems and done it enough times and started to develop platform capabilities or multi-product capabilities or the ability to connect, constituents with others and figure out how to monetize or commercialize the solution more creatively. But you have to go and solve a real problem. And so I think what becomes important is for entrepreneurs, for founders to think about what is our wedge into the market? What's a smart wedge? Going after a market segment or a set of users that maybe, whether it's Epic or other incumbents, aren't really serving well, but there needs to be a coherent plan about what happens after you go and secure that wedge and start meeting those constituents' needs. How do you build on top of that? What is the next step? And how do you, over time, build to becoming a successful platform like an Epic? And I think, as I said, there are ways to do it. I think there are ways of competing in ways that Epic can't as a result of the business that they are in. But there's got to be a path. And the trick is you've got to be able to combine sort of the ability to execute on your plan with pursuing and being able to convey a larger plan and a larger vision to investors that they can get on board with. Because you're right, I think most investors would look at a point solution and they might say, well, that might be a nice little business, but that may not be, a business that we want to be in or that we want to back because we want to see much larger opportunities.
Well, that's one of the great games as a smaller entrepreneur, isn't it? Is to try and avoid markets that are so attractive to the biggest, most competitive players that you're competing head on against. It's just very hard to win those. and to find niches, but big enough niches that are worth winning in. What a fascinating challenge, but you're absolutely right. If everybody knew how to do it, it'd be easy, and it's not easy. Seth, I want to thank you for joining us on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. What a pleasure to visit with you. Can you take a moment to tell the audience where they can find out more about you and your firm?
Absolutely. Well, the easiest way is going to be to first Google Seth Joseph Forbes. You'll find me right away. But if you want to find out more about the firm, you can check out summithealth.io or Google Seth Joseph Summit Health. Will pop up right away. And certainly very much appreciate the invite here. Love the conversation, Scott. Hope we can do it again sometime soon.
Again, Seth, thank you so much for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. What a pleasure. Thank you very much.